nursing home cases involving resident on resident harmful incidents. Stick around. Hey out there, everybody. Welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob. I will be your host for this episode. In today's episode, we're talking about cases involving resident on resident harmful incidents. But we don't do that alone. We have a fantastic attorney, Evan Jones, to talk with us about that. And we're going to be talking about what does it mean to have a resident on resident incident? What type of cases are those? And what are some of the challenges involving those cases? So be sure to stick around for that. But first, let's do our nursing home regulation question of the week. This week, I think the difficulty level is pretty easy. So if you get this right, give yourself 10 points. Under 42 USC 483.10E, the resident has the right to A, share a room with the spouse if the spouse lives in the same facility, B, share a room with any other resident, or C, share a room with a non-resident. And the answer is A. Every resident has the right to share a room with their spouse if that spouse lives in the same facility. This is a part of the long-term care residents' rights under the federal regulations. All right, now it's time for the everyone's favorite. It's time for the ChatGPT-generated nursing home regulation joke of the week. Just a gentle reminder, everybody, this is AI's attempt to blend humor in United States code, so set your expectations to probably disappointed. Gene, can we get that queued up?
The ChatGPT-generated nursing home regulation joke of the week.
Skynet.
Regulation 42 USC 483.72D insists on a governing body for nursing homes because someone has to officially take the blame for the bingo prizes. Yes, we're legally responsible for your missing sock and the overcooked carrots. Please hold your applause until after pudding time.
And there you have it, folks. Proof that the singularity remains ahead of us. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking to Evan Jones, a fantastic personal injury attorney at Blasingame, Birch, Jared, and Ashley PC, who specializes in catastrophic injury cases, including medical malpractice and nursing home negligence. With extensive experience, he has secured substantial settlements and verdicts totaling millions of dollars for his clients. Evan's background includes serving in the United States Army Judge Advocate General Corps and representing medical institutions in personal injury claims before transitioning to the plaintiff side, the light side, some would say. His dual perspective enhances his ability to fight for clients' rights effectively, and we're so happy to have him on the show. Evan, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning.
So I had seen you speak at a CLE at some time back, and it was a fantastic CLE dealing with harmful incidents that occur between residents.
Right.
And so anything from maybe assault or battery and things like that. But what I wanted to start off with, just so that we kind of we begin the conversation this way, there's a reason why we're saying harmful incidents between residents as opposed to violent acts or somebody attacks somebody. Can you kind of talk about why the perspective is that way in a nursing home case?
Sure. I mean, harmful acts is obviously more than just violent acts, and it can occur in many different forms. I mean, you can have your assault between residents. You can have sexual misconduct, including even rape. But it can also include unwanted touching, which doesn't result in a lot of harm, but obviously affects the resident's privacy and dignity, quality of life. But it can also be a mental and emotional abuse as well, where, two residents in particular living together will not necessarily get along. And, that type of emotional abuse can occur, when one resident emotionally and attacks another throughout the residency. But you know, I mean, you can always have the extreme cases too, and that's what that seminar, or at least what I was talking about, is resident-on-resident homicide, which is, you know, occurs more often than not, and you know, unfortunately.
We had a podcast episode a few years ago. It's like getting many years ago. I feel like I'm getting so old as this as the time goes by. But we had a Dr. Elon Caspi, who talked about the resident on resident incidents. And one of the things that he kind of stressed is that as we talk about it, when we say homicide, attack, violence, it's almost like we are assuming that there's mens rea. So, and I guess what his point was is kind of like, you know, a lot of times in when there's an incident between residents, there's not the mens rea because there's not the cognitive capacity. So like it would be unfair to frame it in a certain way because, you know, if there's no cognitive capacity, can we call it, you know, murder or whatever the case is? It's almost like you're bringing in baggage when maybe we shouldn't, which I thought was kind of an interesting point that he brought up in that podcast. But okay, so in your experience then, what is the role that the nursing home through the nursing process would play in reducing the risk of resident or resident incidents?
And you know, to your physician's point, I mean, the blame generally doesn't lie on the resident who commits the violent act. The blame is usually with the nursing home, and it begins with many times their business practices. There is tremendous, as you know, pressure for a lot of nursing homes. We call it to put heads in the beds. And most of these resident-on-resident violent attacks, whether it be a rape or a homicide, starts with the nursing home putting a resident or putting residents in the nursing home that really they cannot handle. They can't handle their mental health. They can't handle what happens when they're not taking their medications, and often with mental health, you have to be on a long regimen of medication. And if you go off on it, it takes time to stabilize and get back on it. And the nursing home doesn't have the skill or the ability to really handle those types of residents, but yet they want them in the home because they can charge Medicare and Medicaid and private insurance for these residents and their residency, but they create a potentially dangerous situation by first letting them in the home. Secondly, there's really not an understanding from a skilled nursing perspective of, like I said, mental health and mental health disorders. For instance, treating patients that have a schizoaffective disorder. And schizoaffective disorders in this country often lead, when these residents are unstable, to violent acts. I mean, many of the murders in this country, I forget the percentage. I had a case years ago where I was up on just how often police respond to homicides where the perpetrator has been diagnosed with a schizoaffective disorder. They're unstable. They're suffering from delusions and hallucinations, and they act out violently. Yeah, there's not mens rea there, but still, nonetheless, you have the violent act. And so the nursing home is allowing these people to, you know, and it's a difficult situation. So, because where do you put them when they're elderly? But they're allowing them to enter into the nursing home environment, and often what they do is place them with a roommate, because as you know, with a lot of these skilled nursing facilities, there's two and sometimes three people in the same room. And you put somebody, for instance, that has a schizoaffective disorder in a room with somebody that has Alzheimer's, dementia, and wanders and takes things, and you're you're asking for a recipe for disaster. And so that's how it begins, usually. Another thing nursing homes are not doing is while they are required to screen their own employees for felonies, a history of felonies, they're not doing it with nursing home residents. And often some of these nursing home residents have very violent pasts, and the violent pasts really have haunted them throughout their life, and they bring that into the nursing home. And now you add even a diagnosis of dementia and Alzheimer's, and the person will act out.
So I think that, that's an interesting point. I don't know the feasibility. Like, I mean, I guess I haven't thought about that. Like the, what's, it would have to be legislature. It would or legislation that would require the nursing homes, at least in Georgia, to do a criminal background check.
Right.
So, because I mean, I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, but the standard of care doesn't require a Georgia nursing home to run a criminal background check. I'm assuming unless they had some type of constructive notice or actual notice to the person
Right.
but before moving in without any other observation, look back time, has criminal tendencies. Like I, so I guess it almost, it's almost like a, it would be a advocacy thing, a legislation thing to move that needle.
Yeah, I mean it's unfortunate, and it's one of those things that hopefully changes over time. But it seems like, of course, everything with nursing homes is what does it cost? And doing an NCIC check or criminal background check does cost some money, but it seems very reasonable. And it's just when you're promising residents and their families a safe environment, why don't you do a criminal background check? Because surprisingly, just on even unrelated cases, we've represented families whose loved ones in nursing homes. I mean, I represented a family one time whose loved one died from terrible wounds, but in the past he had murdered his wife, and he's in the nursing home, and he wasn't a
Surprise.
violent person. But the
Yeah.
fact that, I mean, what I kind of always found kind of interesting is the defense counsel never knew that the deceased murdered his wife, and had spent 20 plus years in prison in South Georgia, for murdering his wife. So it's, and one of the homicide cases I had, both residents had extensive criminal histories that involved aggravated assault and murder. And here they are being stuck in a room together during COVID. And, I mean, it didn't take much. It didn't
Right.
take much for one to attack the other.
Interesting. So I guess then in reality, as it stands right now, it really is up to that initial nursing assessment, the initial interactions with the residents' representatives or the family to really have any notice of what's going to happen, aside from as you mentioned,
Right.
some proclivities like the cognitive issues that some people come in with. But other than that, that nursing assessment, they're not, they're, the nursing home is not on, is not going to know.
No, but this is where it gets really kind of interesting, and maybe we're splitting hairs, but I mean, you noted, does the standard of care require a background check? Well, if I'm admitting someone, I'm an administrator of a nursing home, and I've decided to admit John Doe, who has a schizoaffective disorder or schizophrenia, or he has maybe even a bipolar disorder, or he's got, another kind of red flag is this adult conduct disassociative antisocial, well, it's adult conduct antisocial personality disorder.
Sure.
It's a disassociative disorder, but those things in someone's background, I do think the standard of care requires the nursing home to investigate this person's past a little bit. And that may require a background check, but it also probably requires a little bit more thorough history with the family. about acting out in the past. But I also think the standard of care requires, where did this person come from? Let me see if they've come from another facility or step down unit like a ALF or personal care home, and how are they interacting with other residents there? It's not, I mean, that's not only common sense, but I do think it's the standard of care if you have some of these mental health disorders that we're seeing in nursing homes these days.
That makes sense. I mean, like I mean, that's, I mean, we're not saying that anybody with those conditions is going to attack somebody,
No.
but it seems the statistics support that further investigation will be warranted in those situations.
Yes. It does. And that's where, I mean, obviously the medical director, the attending physician needs to be, I mean, that may be the onus may be on the physician more so than even the nursing home to have these red flags that come up with some of these mental health disorders that are associated when the person is unstable with violent acts.
Sure. Tell me about your experience with these type of cases. What are some of the major hurdles that you find in resident on resident incident cases?
That's a good question. From a just a basic litigation level, some of the major hurdles are is you're going to have to get the other residents' records, and that's, obviously the defense is going to at first claim a HIPAA violation and claim that it's not relevant when it is. Normally, a motion to compel is filed. I think no one has ever given freely to me another resident's records in any case, including resident-on-resident violence. But it's easy enough to win because, most of the times in the past, the key element is did the nursing home have notice or knowledge of prior violent acts? And most of the acting out is a culmination of things. It's not the first time it happened. The resident who acted out multiple times before. I've never seen a case where there wasn't in the nursing notes or in any type the physician's progress notes evidence that the resident had acted out against nursing home employees, acted out against other residents. And again, when they have those, like if they have a schizoaffective disorder, you can almost guarantee it that it's going to be in those types of documents. So you have to go through the court system and you're going to win. I mean, we've never lost one of those motions. And we've had defense concede once we filed motions and we've pursuant to HIPAA because HIPAA allows you to get these documents. There's a specific provision in HIPAA that allows you to get other resident records. Defense counsel, if they know that, they play stupid and act like it's HIPAA doesn't allow it, but HIPAA actually allows in a judicial proceeding for you to receive qualified protective health information on another resident. So that's you've got to get that is you've got to start evaluating not only your resident, but you've got to evaluate that other resident who attacked your resident. The bigger issue is, go ahead.
I was going to just jump in real quick that I've heard, I mean, it's funny to me. Like, I understand the perspective of the defense in the sense of like, okay, even though we are aware of HIPAA, this just seems like a big ask to give you a whole bunch of other people's medical records. But it's funny because, like, like you mentioned, I don't know of any instance of any nursing home plaintiff's lawyer not getting the other residents' records in a
I mean,
situation like this. It's like you have to go through the motions. But I was going to say that I've heard of other attorneys reaching out to the family of the other resident and requesting or getting permission from the other fa from the aggressor, for lack of a better word, the permission, the HIPAA release from them, and bypassing the whole issue.
You can. I mean, that seems to me that that would be harder, because, I mean, the getting the other resident records passes the rule 403, probative versus prejudicial smell test easily. It's relevant. And it's necessary to prove notice of knowledge. I mean, which is what you
Sure.
need to do in these cases, that the nursing home and its employees had notice or knowledge that this person had either a psychiatric disorder and or both overt acts associated with that that were going to lead to poor decision making when putting both of them in the same situation or in the same room or the same hallway or the same dining area,
Right.
whatever it may be. So you're going to win that battle. It's just kind of frustrating that you have to go through it.
Sure.
I have had defense counsel say, "Hey, I know you're going to win this, but my client won't let me
Of
give the
course.
records." I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. That's just part and parcel. That's another podcast. Just the whole entire obstructionist, view that nursing homes put forward and make our job more difficult. But ultimately, they lose a lot of credibility when they do things like that. So you will get those records, and that's the basis for your case right there. Is you, if you, and you may have remember from that seminar, is I like to line up. I'm visual, and I like to line up both residents. And I use the term lion versus lamb. I've had lion versus tiger too. So it's not, and sometimes our victim is not necessarily the most innocent party.
Sure.
Somebody was going to kill somebody or harm somebody, but and then I start looking at diagnoses. I look at medications that they're on. I look at medications they're not taking. Interestingly, in a nursing home, as and I hope this is not a rabbit trail, but residents have a right not to take their medications. So, a resident with a schizoaffective affective disorder says, "I don't want to take my risperidone, which is an antipsychotic." They have a right to do that, but it also is very harmful to other residents when they don't
Everybody
take it.
else, yeah.
So it begs the question, why are you letting that person in the nursing home? And two, what safeguards do you have if they decide not to take their medication, which is within their rights? But they will become unstable. And are you isolating them or are you allowing them? I mean, the funny thing about it is they're always in these behavioral units too. I mean, they all, because they act out. So they're, there's behavior management programs. So they're in there with other residents that act out too. So it's a recipe for disaster. So
Right.
that's one issue. You asked, what are some other hurdles? The business practices, and proving, and really, you need to do this through a 30B6, which, and they'll probably identify the admissions director, the administrator, and maybe the DON and some others. But you need to start looking at the business practices of admitting residents. What is the criteria? What kind of safeguards does the nursing home have? Are they admitting everybody because they can pay? And if that's the case, then I think you need to go even higher to the corporate level and see if there's incentive-based pay for admitting people into the nursing home. Because, for instance, an admissions director many times is not a healthcare professional, but they're responsible for admitting different types of residents. So how's an admissions director going to know that somebody that you just admitted has an extensive psychiatric history? An extensive history of not wanting to take medications, or even a violent history, they don't care. They're just looking at, do I get a bonus if I put somebody in this particular facility? So who's watching over that? What type of safeguards are in place? Corporate safeguards. There's usually not many,
It sounds to me, and I could be wrong, but with respect to understanding the admissions policy, that goes to the why of what happens. So it's not just the, you're not telling the jury the resident A, had an interaction with resident B. It's why did that occur? And it occurred because the nursing home wants more and more money, and so they're admitting more and more people. I think that's kind of is that's about what you're saying.
You are exactly correct. As we tell families, when we take these cases, any case, there's a deeper issue than, for instance, mom broke down with a pressure sore, became septic and died, or mom fell because there wasn't a fall prevention plan in place. Mom got attacked by this other resident. The issue is, why did this happen? We can put together, well, resident A had hallucinations and paranoia and a dissociative personality disorder and attacked resident B because they weren't on medications. But the deeper where you want to attack the system, if we're in here to try to change the system, which I truly believe what we're supposed to do, of how nursing homes do business, and we've got to attack that way of that, why they're doing business and how they're doing business. They have no safeguards in place to handle patients with violent pasts, with psychiatric disorders that have a tendency to, when they're stressed or when they're unstable, they act out. So how do we get that nursing home to put in place systems, or even to say, yeah, we'll get paid for this, but it's not worth it. The harm outweighs the safety, but that's what's not happening. They're just looking at money, profits over people. But on the back end, they're not training their nursing staff to deal with these types of disorders or these types of residents. And they're actually putting their employees in harm's way as well, all in the name of, here's our census, here's our daily census, and here's how many beds we have filled.
If there was a nursing home abuse podcast drinking game, it would be you would drink whenever I would reference that Mark Kosorowski would always say that the people didn't die on the Titanic because it hit an iceberg. They died because the people that owned the Titanic didn't want to pay for enough lifeboats for the people. So that's kind of to your point. So Evan, in the last couple minutes here, what's another challenge that you find in these cases? Like, so for example, like on a spectrum of the other that you have a history of violence versus the other end of the spectrum where maybe there's not that much, is that an issue? Like, how much notice is enough notice, and do you ever run into that problem?
You mean how much notice is enough notice as far as the knowledge of the nursing
Exactly,
home?
exactly. Is that ever an issue in these cases?
I'll be honest. I mean, in every sexual assault, every rape case, every homicide case, every aggravated assault case we've taken, sadly, the nursing home is very well aware of overt acts that occurred days, weeks, months, and even years before. But, I've always said that in a sense, the staff, particularly CNAs, but to an extent the nursing staff, they are victims of the same system that the residents are, this profits over people system that we keep seeing that causes all these bad things to happen. With resident-on-resident issues, they really can't do anything a lot of times. They a lot of times they know that this one resident has acted out, or they know this one resident has gone and jumped in a female resident's bed, or there was some unwanted touching, whether this resident knows what he is doing or not. But and they bring it to the attention of management, but it's kind of just, it's kind of a no harm, no foul until it is. I mean, it's
Right.
like the person who falls 15 times and doesn't harm himself, but then the 16th time develops subdural hematoma and dies. I always use this analogy, and I've used it at trial, and I use it a lot with defense counsel. Just, how many times, I mean, is it legal when you get in your car and every morning because you're in a hurry, you want run a red light? No, it's not. And you do it for 200 days in a row. And 200 days running that red light, you haven't, who cares? Nobody's been harmed. 201st day, you ran that red light and you killed somebody. I mean, that 201st day was predicated on the fact that your habit, your routine was 200 days before you allow, you ran a red light, you knew you were doing something wrong. Nursing homes are no different. I mean, and that's just a common jury example that they understand in their own life. But nursing homes for days and days and weeks and months and even years know these residents are going to act out, and it's kind of like no harm, no foul. And then all of a sudden, the resident acts out, and then there's a violent act, or there's a homicide, or there's a death, or rape, assault, whatever it may be. And nursing home's like, well, we didn't see this coming. We didn't see this coming. Yeah, you did. You
Right.
saw it coming from day one. They were running the red light from day one with their overt actions. They just didn't cause harm, I
Right.
mean, and so you have to notice the knowledge is there. You just have to be detailed about it and look at even little things that this resident's doing. Like if a resident is acting out against the staff, like sometimes refusing to eat and throwing their tray and stuff like that, start linking that to other acts and other things they're doing. And believe it or not, you'll start putting a chart together and you'll say, they should have seen this coming. I mean, it's not a far stretch to throwing your food and cussing out a CNA to attacking an employee or attacking another resident. It's just not that far. And then you use the diagnosis, whether it's an Alzheimer's, a dementia, or even a psychiatric disorder, and you gap that. Well, you make the bridge with that diagnosis because that's part and parcel of the sequela of the diagnosis, Does it make sense?
It makes absolute sense, and that's a great analogy with the red lights. Well, Evan, it's been fantastic speaking with you about this. I really appreciate it. You have a lot of experience in this and a lot of passion for it, so I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with everybody.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and anytime.
Well, everybody, I hope that you found this podcast entertaining and educational. If you did, please be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. If you're watching this on YouTube, maybe hit the notification bell. Is that what? Yeah, hit the notification bell. Maybe leave a comment or two. If you have any suggestions for guests that I should talk to or topics that you want to hear about, please let me know in some fashion. New episodes come out every Monday. And with that, folks, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.